coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm.
Well, hello everybody. How are you doing? I could not be more ecstatic this evening. Oh, I'm so ecstatic I'm pushing buttons before their time. Yeah, welcome to episode 50, everybody. Man, it doesn't seem like we have almost been on the air in this incarnation for a year. Almost a year. We have had an amazing panoply of guests. This upcoming weekend, we will be going out and recording at the Texas UFO Con. That will be the first annual out in Jefferson. There is a great lineup of speakers coming there, including George Jones, S. Miles Lewis, Stephen Miles Lewis, that is, Daniel Allen Jones, Nick Redfern will be there. I cannot wait to see him again. Joey the UFO Magnet George, as well as UFO Jane, some of the folks that are there. We'll have Craig Woolheater on here in just a minute to give us the lowdown on the conference, what brought that to be, why it is to begin with. We, of course, know him from CryptoMundo.com, as well as the Falk Monster Festival, the Texas Bigfoot Conference, the upcoming Texas Bigfoot Film Festival, as well as the Texas Bigfoot Museum, soon to be in Jefferson. So we will be talking to him about all things weird and strange in Texas, including the Texas UFO Con. In the second part of our episode, after commercial break, we will be talking to our good friend Stephen Myers from the Pharaoh's Pump Foundation. He just got done spending a month in Egypt, and we will be talking about his trip to Dendera, the Temple of Dendera, the strange melted steps there, the more than intriguing carvings on the wall, as well as the Great Pyramid of Giza, how they possibly built the Great Pyramid of Giza to begin with, what it was actively used for, and is it actively a tomb like they say it is? Because by everything that they teach us of Egyptian religion and faith, it doesn't really seem like it would be. So we'll be getting into that and so much more. Before we get into our Facebook stories of the week, news of the week, let me take off my conspiracy filters there. Let's hop on over to the Curious Realm Facebook page, folks. Of course, Facebook on Curious Realm. Curious Realm Facebook group is where you can go to get all of the latest news. Of course, big hearts out to those in Poland who have been hit by possible Russian missiles right now. The UN is scrambling to see what's going on. But out of PopSci.com, the biggest ancient city you've probably never heard of is in Illinois. That is a great covering of the massive mounds built by the mound builders up there. Out of 14news.com, Geico caveman actor joins USI facility as English instructor. This could not get more funny. The truth of the matter is, yeah, the guy who played the caveman is now an English instructor. So pretty funny stuff there. Stop on by and check that out. ScienceAlert.com, the oldest evidence of ancient humans cooking with fire has just been found. Out of futurism.com, objects we thought were black holes may actually be wormholes, scientists say. That was a pretty interesting read and some interesting evidence, as well as this one out of Science Alert, which was really wild. Scientists created a black hole in the lab, then it started to glow. They basically like aligned a bunch of electrons and it started doing black hole type stuff. Really interesting read there. Kiev attacked as the world leaders meet at G20 out of BBC.com. And of course, the amazing episode 50 announcement right there. Austin Statesman cracking the code, a trip to Waco reveals the not so secret of Masons in Texas. So yeah, stop on by, check that out, folks. That is out of the Austin American Statesman, and that is about the Masonic Museums in Waco, Texas. Once again, the news of the week is brought to you every week by the Curious Realm Facebook group. Thousands of people there having conversation about news and other topics. I want to thank our good guest and friend, Kimberly McGeorge. Hopefully she will be on in our one-year episode coming up. SecretToEverything.com is her website. She is your source for alternative health, healing frequency exercises, and consciousness expansion. Stop on by and check her out at KimberlyMcGeorge.com. And of course, while you're online, check out CuriousRealm.com. That's where you can check out all of the episodes. That's where you can go and share your story at CuriousRealm.com/story. You can share your experience of the paranormal, UFOs, cryptids. If you're a targeted individual, if you have been abducted by aliens, if you're a government whistleblower, you can leave all of your evidence there. You can do so in an anonymous way, or you can use your name, and we will use that information in upcoming episodes with our experts. Now, speaking of experts, speaking of good folks that come on the show regularly, welcome back to the show, Craig Wohlheter. Normally, we're a little bit more spaced out between visits from you, but... Man, we got a run of shows going on here in Texas, 3 months in a row.
You were just here in Texas, in Jefferson, and like you're going to be back in a couple of days.
Yeah, just this upcoming weekend, actually. I leave out Friday, so it'll be super fun. I can't wait. We just had the Texas Bigfoot Conference there. And that went off amazingly well. There was a great crowd there, hoping for a good crowd at the first annual Texas UFO Con. Now, Craig, of course, as we mentioned earlier, you are the founder of Cryptomundo. That was really the first website out there on the internet regarding cryptids, sightings of strange things. Where you could go and report things. At one point, it was even Alexa rated as one of the highest visited websites around. Was it that brought you about to, I guess, pursuing a life of pursuing the strange, the weird?
Well, I have to go back to your news stories from the top of the hour there.
Of course.
At first, I almost got offended when you were talking about the pyramids, because at first I thought you said geezer, and I'm pretty old, instead of Giza. So at first I wasn't quite sure of that, so I had to think about that for a second. The other thing I thought when you were talking about that one story is that apparently it's not that hard to become an English professor at a university, because it's so easy a caveman can do it.
That's right. So easy a caveman can do it. And I always loved that ad campaign. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. And, people forget the fact that actors have lives, man. Like, they got jobs. They aren't all just like 24/7 actors. So good for him. But,
So that just sprang into my mind that, you know, apparently it's not hard. So easy a caveman can do it.
It's a good one.
But how did I get so mixed up in cryptozoology and all these weird things? I was interested in weird stuff when I was a kid. So I guess I'm a weirdo going way back. And it's just something that, you know, I was interested in weird things and UFOs and dinosaurs and movie monsters and, you know, all kinds of stuff as a kid. And, it just kind of branched out into cryptozoology in my early years, being interested in a creature in the Dallas-Fort Worth area called the Lake Worth Monster. And, you know, read a couple of books by John Keel and then, you know, saw the legend of Boggy Creek, in 1973 when it went on its national, you know, it was distributed nationally. As a matter of fact, I was just in Falk earlier today making arrangements for next spring's 2023 Falk Monster Festival.
Wow.
Met with the mayor, checking out a new venue for that event, meeting with the owner of the Monster Mart there, Denny Roberts. And, you know, I was traveling with my good buddy Lyle Blackburn, who gave a Bigfoot presentation. Well, actually, a cryptid creatures presentation in Leesville, Louisiana. And he crashed here at my place in Jefferson last night. And then we drove over to Falk this morning. And so, you know, it's just been a couple of days of Bigfoot and cryptid creatures and all that. So, you know, it's just kind of a, you know, for me, it's just kind of a normal thing. It's just part, you know, part of life that, you know, discussing weird creatures and visiting these types of places. And so, you know, I've just after having a Bigfoot sighting in 1994 and, you know, founding a Bigfoot research organization and deciding to host Bigfoot conferences and work with universities and museums, putting together Bigfoot museum exhibits and talks and such. And so, you know, I've been hosting the Bigfoot conference here in Jefferson since 2001. Here in Northeast Texas. And since moving here, I decided to really try to bring tourists to town. The fact that, you know, it is a small town of less than, I just saw the population sign as I was driving back from Falk. I think it said population 1,875 people. And as wow. such, you know, it depends on tourism to, you know, to generate enough tax money and an economy to, you know, to support the town. And so, you know, being the official, you know, Bigfoot capital of Texas, as Jefferson was proclaimed in 2018, doing other things, as you mentioned, the Bigfoot Film Festival, the Falk Monster Festival, the Texas Bigfoot Conference. And so I decided to, you know, always been interested in UFOs as well. And so I've got friends that are in the UFO community. It's not something that I really dabble in other than just being curious about it. But Nick Redfern is one of my good buddies. I mean, he's a renowned author on many topics, a lot of it being UFOs and
yep.
government conspiracies and cryptozoology. And he and I were roommates for a period of time about 10 years ago and been buddies for 20 years. And so wow. I've kicked it around for a while. And so I just decided to, you know, to try and put something together that was, you know, something that might be educational and entertaining for the public. So I decided to, you know, put this together. Most of these speakers this year are good friends of mine. And I definitely wanted to focus on Texas cases. So, you know, all the presentations are going to be focused on stuff that's happened in Texas and even locally to this area, the Piney Woods of East Texas, UFO sightings out here. But I mean, it's going to focus on Texas based UFO sightings, UFO crashes even, and even, you know, extraterrestrial alien encounters. That's what we've got, seven speakers, and we've got one guy that, you know, is, touted to be able to call in UFOs using his mind. I've never seen him perform this thing, so, but we're going to have a night sit out after the conference on Saturday, where, you know, people that come, bring yourself a folding camp chair or whatever, and we're just going to gather out in the dark area of the parking lot there and hang out for a while and see if he can work his magic that he claims he could do. So, like I said, we'll be discussing all kinds of cool and interesting topics and, you know, maybe even calling in a couple of UFOs that night.
Well, and it's really interesting to see. We recently had Sev Talk on. We've had Kathleen Martin from MUFON on. And it's interesting to see how many UFO encounters now are involving paranormal, are involving things like the closest analog would be ESP. You know, basically things like CS5 protocols. That kind of stuff. And even the CS5 groups that are out there have been putting out some pretty amazing videos and showing some pretty amazing results from their experimentation of group mind meditation. So basically the idea of what Joey George does, but in a group setting, where everybody is meditatively focused on the same point of contact. And they've had some great result with it. I'm kind of mixed myself about I think it's kind of on the dangerous side of having a seance.
Sure.
Cool experience, but... You know, you're kind of opening a window.
Yeah. You might be opening a window or a door that you don't want to. You know, Pandora's box, you know, going way back.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, I'm on the fence about, I've seen strange lights in the sky that I couldn't identify as, you know, known aircraft or, you know, or planetary or stars, but, you know, just going out at night, especially out here in the piney woods of East Texas where I live, and look up at the sky at night and just see all of those stars that you can, you know, that are visible. And just think about the fact that, you know, our sun is a star with planets orbiting around it. And the possibility that there's, you know, planets out there orbiting those suns, potential suns, those stars, and the thought that there's intelligent life in other places on those planets that are orbiting all those stars. I mean, if there's not any other intelligent life out there, you know, it's a huge waste of space. I mean, there's so many possibilities for intelligent life to be out there in click it and off the far reaches of the galaxy, the universe, you know, all of that. I mean, there's just, to me, the potential it's far easier to see the potential that there is than to say, no, it's just us. There's nothing else.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty arrogant in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, but all equations, the Drake equation, of course, they've considered revamping the Drake equation for modern standard. However, we regularly discover new Earth-like planets. We just recently discovered one that was 80% water. So the odds on favorite...
That sounds kind of like us.
Yeah, yeah. The odds on favorite is that it's out there somewhere. Whether or not it's exactly like us, and I think we as humans have a real psychological tendency to begin with to anthropomorphize. And
sure,
if you aren't aware of what that means, folks, that means to try and place humanistic meaning upon the actions of something else. So you see a gorilla hitting a rock with another rock, and you think, oh, well, he's figuring out how to use a tool. Look at him go. No, We might use that rock as a tool to do something. The gorilla's just banging a rock. So you have to be real careful about the whole idea of anything coming from beyond the stars would surely be friendly. Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know, because Stephen Hawking, one of the most brilliant minds ever to exist in humanity, was like, you know, we should really stop beaming those messages out. We should really stop giving directions on how to find us and what our genome is.
Just look at mankind as a rule. We, you know, we're polluting our own planet. We kill. We go to war with each other. Yeah. If we, meaning mankind, can conquer it, we do. If something, like you said, drastically more intelligent than us came here, what makes us, like you said, what makes us think that they would be friendly? Anybody that saw the Twilight Zone episode, The Serve Man.
Yep.
The thought was the aliens are coming here to help us, but it was a damn cookbook.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And we have to be careful for that. We have to look out for that because, you know, once again, we tend to put our hopes and dreams into a situation as humanity. And when you're talking about something visiting you from among the stars that has the technology to do that, you got to be
careful. Way more advanced than we are. Yeah. Way more advanced
than we are. And we just assume the fact that because our hope is to get to a point of harmony amongst the planet and with each other and everybody cooperating that, well, because they're thousands of years more technologically advanced, they would be more advanced mentally and spiritually. Not necessarily so. The Romans were way more advanced than 90% of the people that they conquered. Guess what they did? They conquered them.
They had
wheels and chariots and aqueducts and all kinds of stuff. The Vandals did not. It's interesting. And here just a second ago, I was showing the video that I made when we had our previous incarnation, Dudes and Beer. My wife and I had actually gone out to Marfa. And here's a video that I took of the Marfa lights where you can see them like splitting apart, moving, blinking on and off. Really wild stuff. It was pretty incredible. We went for two nights and had experiences both night watching these lights move around the sky.
Those are just car headlights from oncoming traffic.
that have been seen since the time of settlers.
Hey, those covered wagons had headlights. How did they travel at night?
They had lanterns.
How did they travel at night? There's no way. They had to have headlights.
But it was or definitely an experience.
Gas. It could have been swamp gas.
But yet still, I am not willing to say that what I saw there is of alien origin. You know?
Right.
And I think that even my... I've had a couple of experiences where I saw lights moving in the sky. Could have been a satellite that I wasn't aware of, something like that. Nothing crazy. It didn't like stop, turn on a dime, and pew, shoot off. Nothing like that. But there was a time years ago with my good friend Billy from high school. And every year at New Year's, we'd go to a friend's house. We had drinks, all kinds of stuff. He lived next door. Go ahead.
I've got a question.
Go ahead.
You said drinks, and then you said all kinds of stuff. What fell under the category of all kinds of stuff?
Well, I won't lie to say that there maybe weren't hallucinogens involved. However, that was only two of us. One of us had no hallucinogens, saw the same thing. And in addition, the neighbor...
One of you had no hallucinogens?
Yes.
Okay, so you were actually doing it under scientific protocol
and
scientific experiment to see by having some that were under the influence and some that were using a placebo to see if the results were the same. Well, I like that.
And one, the neighbor who went to high school with us as well, who was on the spectrum, highly on the spectrum, but would literally call phone numbers all around Houston. Like, he had all the phone numbers to Astroworld memorized.
Okay.
Like, all the payphone numbers, all the payphone numbers to the high schools in Spring Branch he had memorized. And he'd just go and, like, dial phone numbers to payphones at high schools and, like, talk to whoever picked him up. Things like that. So Ari was there, and we saw this amorphous black object. That's the only way I can describe it. Could have been like a trash bag the size of this room floating through the sky. Beats me. But all it was just this large amorphous black shape moving through the sky, blocking out stuff as it went by. We attributed it to strange things, what have you, maybe some hallucinogens, until the next year when we showed up at our friend's house for New Year's Eve again, and there was Ari, and he came out, and he's like, "Hey, guys, what's happening?" And I was like, "Nothing much, man. How you doing?" He's like, "All right. Hey, you remember that weird thing we saw last year?" And I was like, "Whoa, Ari saw that." And Ari remembers that. So it wasn't just us that saw that. And that is why I, A, don't discount, B, why I always say UFO descriptively in that way. I will always say that there might be some other explanation before we go to alien. But there is a reason why it has that classification. It is a flying object that we cannot identify.
Sure. That doesn't mean that it's an alien craft or, you know, whatever, like you're saying. It's just, you know, it's unidentified. We don't know what it is and don't claim to know what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, did you see that movie, the recent movie? Nope.
No, I have not seen that yet. That was on my radar to watch before I went to the conference, actually, because I knew it would be a topic of conversation amongst people.
Yeah, so. It's a very cool movie, and it's very mysterious, but you know, the subject matter that people are saying nope to is a UFO of sorts, but it's not a UFO. People would think. It's very interesting. I really enjoyed the movie. It was a really cool movie. But I don't know if it's streaming or anything yet.
It is. But, it is. It's available for purchase on Amazon, all that kind of stuff. So it's on my watch
list. You should watch it. You should watch it before this weekend then.
Oh, I will. Now,
because it is involving UFO. UFO, an unidentified flying object.
Well, and there has been a lot in the media over the last many years, Craig. A whole lot.
Oh, sure.
And it's nice to see the fact that if anything, experiencers are becoming more comfortable coming forward with their story. It's even affected the cryptid community and people coming forward with stories.
Sure. I mean, the government is, you know, it seems like, the cover up possibly is being lifted. I mean, you know, they're forming new task forces for, you know, people, you know, assigning people to task forces to investigate this stuff. You know, is it Project Blue Book all over again? I don't know. But, it seems like it's come full circle to, what it was in the past with, government agencies looking into this stuff. And, it's very interesting. And again, who knows what this stuff is? You know, you and I, we actually sat down for lunch on Sunday just 2 days ago.
Yep.
And we discussed some of this stuff. And you know, to me, a lot of the activity is seen around, you know, military installations, strange lights in the sky, you know, you know, I think my personal opinion, a lot of it is probably top secret military, stuff that, you know, that we just don't know about. I mean, I always liken it to, you know, the fact that, the stealth bomber, you know, a black triangular craft that, you know, how many years was that in production, testing, flying before that it was rolled, before it was rolled out for the public to see it? It had to be years and years and years. And just, you know, just this weekend I was reading about, and I think we talked about that too, about that top secret aircraft that,
yep,
that had never been photographed, and it just landed from a 900-day mission.
Yep. I just pulled up the article as you mentioned that.
Yeah. It spent 930 some days like that.
Oh yeah.
You know, it was just on a mission, and it, before that it had done a 707-day mission.
Yeah, yeah.
And it had never been photographed.
Yep.
Well, never been photographed for the public.
Breaking its previous record, it said.
Yeah.
And that was its sixth mission. And I think that's what a lot of people don't understand, Craig, is that, you know, we talk about it regularly with Mike Turber, especially X-37B. The Space Force is nothing new. Nothing new. We started that years ago when we put Space Command in Cheyenne Mountain. The example of the X-37B, I mean, the first time that thing flew and was recorded was like 2012. It launched 2012 or 2013. Then the first time we heard about it was when it landed after 2 years in orbit. After being on a super secret mission for 2 years. And that's all it does is super secret missions for numerous years. Unmanned. Yeah, these are things that are up there regularly. So I have held the whole time that all of this disclosure has been happening, that it makes much more logical sense that it is a point of information dissemination from the government, that the videos that we have seen are more than likely one branch of government A/B testing their technology against a known quantitative, you know, our own technology, right, before it hits a battlefield, which explains, sure, why Air Force personnel came aboard a Navy carrier, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, before they launch it, like you said, into warfare, it's got to be,
yeah,
you know, it's got to be engineered. It's got to be produced. It's got to be tested. It, you know, all of those things.
Well,
you know,
like I mentioned in our last episode with Mike Turber, the one thing that we tend to forget more than anything is that it's got to be trackable.
Right.
So do you think that they did have blue and came up with stealth technology and no way to detect it? They're just going to put $100 million machine in the air and if we lose it, we lose it.
Yep.
Can't find it. No radar. So, you gotta have the technology to find the thing and track it yourself. Not necessarily the enemy tracking it, but you gotta be able to track your own stuff.
Yeah. It's just, you know, like I said, I think a lot of the strange stuff that's seen is just not disclosed to the public. That's top secret military stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and, most definitely.
You know, does that mean that it's, you know, that it's back engineered, reverse engineered from UFO technology, you know, from actual alien crap? You know, I don't know. Sure, it doesn't mean it's not, but, you know, look at the progression of technology. Of course, there's, you know, like Bob Lazar and, you know, people that talk about you know, all the advancements. Look how fast our, you know, our industrial revolution took place. That, you know, that it is unnatural in the fact that, you know, how fast it progressed. The fact that, you know, that, you know, it just, you know, because, you know, people, you know, other people talk about that, you know, it looks like it, you know, it was kickstarted by, you know, other things other than just us, the natural evolution of machine technology. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know, but I'm interested. I'd like to hear about it. And so I thought I'd put together an event and gather people that I know and that are into this stuff and know a lot more about it and investigate it. And, you know, because there's, you know, pardon my French, but weird shit going on in the sky every day all over the world that people catch on video that they can't be explained. And you know, it's, you know, what is it? It's that identified. That's all we know.
Well, and much like we've said every time that you come on or anybody comes on talking about cryptids or any time that we talk about crop circles, things like that. Yes, the great majority. I'll give 88% of videos see pictures, things like that, utterly fake. Fake or something utterly misunderstood, like the big video that this guy posted recently out of San Antonio, where they just had the San Antonio lead investigator for MUFON on, showing how he does investigation and like, well, you know, unfortunately that one's some Mylar balloons really, really high in the sky, but you know, other things aren't. There's a good 10 to 12% of these things that are anomalous. And they're over our heads. And they're moving really fast. And we should look into it.
Yeah, I mean, I have people that I've encountered known, Nick Redfern, for instance. You know, his dad worked for the British Air Force, I believe, whatever. I don't know the technology. You know, hopefully you're going to set up an interview with him, but make sure and ask him about his dad, because dad, you know, was a radar technician and saw something on radar that moved way faster than anything that was known, and was just told just to ignore it, you know? You know, I know people like, you know, my ex-wife's father, saw a large craft being loaded onto a flatbed trailer out in the deserts of New Mexico that he was a delivery man that delivered food products to like little diners out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And he encountered a state trooper that had the road blocked off and wouldn't let traffic pass, and was told to turn around and detour. Well, a detour was going to take him way, you know, throw him way off of his schedule, you know, to detour several hours around this. And so what he did is, you know, and this is a guy, salt of the earth guy, that told me this story. You know, he got in his truck and drove back up to the top of the hill. And he said he got out of his truck and stood up on the cab of his truck to see what was going on. But before that, I get a little ahead of myself. Before that, he argued with the state trooper. You know, he was told there was an accident and the road was blocked. And he told the state trooper, you know, I can drive, you know, along the side or the shoulder because I need to get past. And the guy, the state trooper, was just short of drawing his gun on him. Told him to get back in his truck, turn around, and go before he unholstered his gun. And like I said, he drove up to the top of a hill, and he stood up on the cab of his truck, and he could see down there, and he saw a large metallic disc-shaped object being loaded up onto a flatbed trailer. Now, again, don't know that that's alien technology. Could be top secret military stuff. I don't know, but this is a guy who was a no bullshit kind of guy and told me that story that, you know, plain as day, wouldn't doubt a word he said. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
I know, you know, just like, you know, out in this part of the country, you can, you know, if you don't know somebody, you know, you get, you know, somebody who knows somebody who's seen a strange creature or something. I mean, it's just more common than you think.
Especially when you start talking small town, like a prime example. I grew up in Crosby, Texas. I spent the first 4 years of my life there. Before I moved west, to the west side of Houston. But right down the road was my grandparents' house in Kennefic, my father's parents. And I spent I spent a week there every summer, man, and I remember hearing about the Cash Landrum incident. You know, and that was one of the incidents, especially here in Texas, that even to this day is still talked about. And one of the instances where people had actual radiation burns, there there were burn marks in the concrete. It was pretty intense. And to know of the reaction to that, and now even showing on screen the UFO sightings map, sightings are increasing since all of the disclosure has started happening, and Texas has truly become a tiny little hotbed of activity. We already had plenty of sightings to begin with, but
and you got to take into account that sightings may not be increasing. The reporting of sightings is increasing because people are probably more comfortable with saying that they've seen something, or, you know, just like with cryptids, you know, people didn't know who to report it to.
Yeah.
You know, it's being publicized more that, you know, the UFO reporting network, MUFON, you know, people are probably more comfortable with, saying that they've seen something strange in the skies than maybe in the past.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like for a Bigfoot sighting, you know, it takes two things. It takes a Bigfoot to be out there, and it takes a person to see it, you know, and typically that's just for a couple of seconds, split seconds, versus, you know, that whole Bigfoot's 24 hours of the day. So people say, well, you know, Bigfoot crosses the road and they go steal chickens from the farmers. Well, you know, it might have done it that day, but what about the other 23 hours, 59 minutes, and 58 seconds?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, it's most sightings of strange encounters and things are very brief, and, you know, it's hard to gauge what creature may be doing, what the craft may be doing, what the strange lights may be doing, because typically you only see it very briefly.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And not only that, you are in an adrenalized moment. You're in an adrenalized state.
Sure.
Moments can seem like hours, or they can go by even faster, you know?
Yeah,
and
everybody's got a cell phone with a camera. How come we don't have videos and pictures all the time?
Well, because not everybody's a trained camera person.
Right.
A lot of them are blurry because, well, people tend to want to zoom in and forget the fact that you've got like a 4K camera. So feel free to leave that thing zoomed out, take a picture, and then zoom in all get out later.
Yeah.
And and you'll still maintain a lot of resolution.
I mean, you know, people see, you know, deer run across the road. People see wild animals, you know, maybe a bobcat or a bear or something run across the road. Well, you don't see a lot of videos of that either because it happens so quick. You know, people aren't traveling with their finger on the on their camera ready to take a picture. I mean, people get startled by things, even mundane things, that they see and happen and take them by surprise and, not prepared to take a picture of it or shoot a video or whatever. I mean, it generally happens very quickly, unexpectedly.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And fortunately, in our modern day and age, like you said, most everybody's roaming around with a camera in their pocket. That camera works whether or not you have cell phone reception or not. In addition to that, a lot of people have Ring cameras. There's tons of stuff caught on Ring cameras,
dash cams,
things like that. So in our modern surveillance and technology state, the chances of catching something on video
are increasing.
Even the videos that I've been taking and posting online, like, man, I took that with like a tiny little spotting scope in my backyard and a security camera, I can clearly see the edges of craters on the moon. That's all backyard available stuff now that you can buy for less than a couple hundred bucks.
And that moon did just sneak up on you out of nowhere.
Yeah, exactly. so just flash by you
in a split second, moving at incredible speeds.
Yeah. Well, even the other day, whenever I posted my first video of the eclipse, my wife was like, wow, you did that time lapse of that really fast. And I was like, that wasn't a time lapse. That's zoomed in on the actual moon. So that is the moon actively moving in real time. That's how fast the moon moves. You think it's just sitting there until you get it in frame on camera and then sit there and watch it for about 2 minutes and it will slowly creep out of frame on the camera. And that will give you a real perception of how fast that thing's moving that far away. Once again, the technology that we have is remarkable. Even right now, I've been ABing a little while ago, the map of the United States as far as UFO sightings. And then the next tab that I have open is the map of the United States for Bigfoot sightings. And when you overlay them, they are almost the exact same map. It's kind of disturbing.
Just goes to prove that Bigfoot is extraterrestrial.
That is the conversation that we've had at least once with every cryptid researcher at all of the shows that I've done with you is a lot of the reporting going on lately is that, Bigfoot travels through portals. Bigfoot is, of alien nature or appears near aliens. And it's interesting to see the crossover between things.
Just like the Bigfoot that's out there and sees some strange lights in the sky and then sees a person watching him, he goes back and tells his Bigfoot buddies, well, these small hairless guys, they must be from the stars because I saw a UFO and I saw a person, a human in the same place at the same time. So they've got to be related. It's got to be connected.
Yeah. Not only hairless, but really, really bright skin.
Right.
So, yeah, we'll see what comes of things as far as disclosure. I am still of the mind that there is something out there. There is life out there. We have been visited. I would almost put even money on the fact that our government is aware of the fact that we have been visited. If not, they have visited with the visitors.
Now, would you put Mattress Mac money on it?
I don't have Mattress Mac money. I barely have mattress money.
I don't even have any money. I don't even have any money hidden under my mattress.
So I'm not going to talk about what's under my mattress.
Well, your mother would be ashamed.
That's right. She was ashamed years ago. There's no difference now. Yeah, it's quite literally something different. So, man, I am greatly looking forward to this weekend, my friend. I can't wait.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be super duper fun. Tell us a little bit about what we can expect. What can we look forward to? Everything else.
Well, Brad. you know what?
What?
I don't even know because it's unexpected. You know, we got speakers. We've got, you know, you named them all off before. We've got two pretty local guys, George Jones and Mitchell Whittington. Mitchell has recently written a book about, I believe it was discussing 31 different UFO cases here in Texas.
Oh, wow.
George Jones has witnessed, you know, UFOs, don't know what they were, here out here in the Piney Woods. He'll be talking about that. We've got Stephen Miles Lewis from the Austin area, who has been investigating anomalous stuff for years and years. Got UFO Jane, who I believe her website is TexasUFOs.com, and you know, just covers all of, you know, the hundreds of sightings of strange things in the sky here in Texas. We got Nick Redfern, who is regularly featured on Ancient Aliens.
Yep.
I mean, he pumps out about 5 or 6 books a year. And not only on UFOs and aliens, but government conspiracies, cryptozoology, all different topics. But, you know, he's somebody that is speaks at a lot of UFO conventions, a lot of television shows about these weird, you know, topics. And I'm leaving somebody out. Let me...
Daniel Allen Jones.
Oh, of course, Daniel Allen Jones, who's our MC as well as has become quite a notable, you know, UFO speaker
yep,
conferences and conventions as well.
And, so, and has, you know, his book about the Aurora.
The Aurora.
Incident.
Yes, I mean, he's going to be discussing the Aurora incident of 1897 in Aurora, Texas, you know, just northwest of Fort Worth, a yep, small community that in 1897 an airship supposedly crashed into a windmill and, you know, an alien body was there. The alien was buried in the cemetery in Aurora. And supposedly the airship was thrown down the well there on Judge Proctor's property, all in 1897. And so, you know, he'll be detailing that case. So it's going to be a lot of cool, interesting stuff talked about. And like I said, all local, pretty much local to Texas. I think Nick is actually going to be comparing a case from Texas, comparing it to the Rendlesham case in Britain, the similarities about that. You know, because, you know, he was, grew up in Britain and, you know, moved to the United States 20 years ago or so, but is very prolific author, on these kind of topics. So it's gonna be a cool deal. And then we got Joey, the UFO magnet, George, who's, you know, going to talk about some of the stuff he does and then take us out at night to go see if he can do what he says he can do.
Well,
so I guess the proof will be in the pudding.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to eat that pudding. I can't wait to be there. It's going to be super fun. Let everybody know where they can go to get their tickets, where they can go to register to attend, all that kind of good stuff.
Just go to Facebook, look up Texas UFO Con. We're going to have, we got some special presentations. We got a catered dinner catered by And I know you're looking forward to this because you missed out the last time. Yeah. But Riverport Barbecue here in Jefferson, that currently is listed on the top 50 barbecue restaurants in Texas, in Texas Monthly Magazine.
Nice.
And it's really good barbecue. We've got a catered barbecue dinner that comes with a VIP ticket, brisket, turkey, sausage, potato salad, beans, coleslaw, and iced tea. And there'll be some kind of dessert. Last time, 4 weeks ago, at the Bigfoot Conference, we had peach cobbler.
Ooh.
So it's going to be a good dinner. That's still available. You can go onto Facebook, look it up, and it'll take you to the registration site where you can register for the event. And you can come hang out with all these people that I mentioned earlier. Myself, Christopher Jordan, the Curious Realm will be there.
Yep.
And we're going to have a great time, and it should be very fun, very interesting. There'll be vendors there that'll be selling, alien and UFO stuff. The speakers will be signing and selling copies of their books. It's going to be out of this world.
It is. It's going to be super great. I can't wait. Craig, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come on, as always, to shamelessly promote these events. I'm all about them. Like I've told you before, I love being a sponsor at them. I love being at the point with my show where I can go out and I can help other shows reach more people with these messages.
And you provide a great service. I certainly appreciate you sponsoring the events. I certainly appreciate you coming out, helping with audio video, taking over the audio video, bringing technology to us that helps have a successful and entertaining event.
Absolutely. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I want to thank you so much for your time tonight. I'll go ahead and let you go while we head out to commercial and get ready for our next guest, Stephen Myers, talking about how the pyramids were built. So look forward to seeing you here in a few days, my friend.
Yeah, it's 3 days away, Friday night. We'll
All
see
right.
you.
Take care, man.
Take care.
All right.
All right. Be
Bye-bye.
Safe. Bye-bye.
Always great talking with Craig Woolheater, folks. While you are online checking out everything from Texas UFO Con, make sure to stop on by Eventbrite.com. Look up Texas UFO Con. That's where you can buy tickets, everything else. Make sure to stop on by CuriousRealm.com as well. That is our website. That's where you can find all the episodes. Speaking of episodes, we didn't mention it a while ago, but we are now officially a member of the amazing KPNL Radio Network. You can find that at kpnl-db.com. If you go to the tab labeled The Shows, you'll see right here on Wednesdays, Curious Realm airs. So they have picked up our replay episodes. We are so proud to be part of the KPNL Radio family out there with amazing shows like our good friends Texas Front Porch, as well as Jason McLean Questions Everything. There's Spaced Out Radio on there, Mysteries and Monsters, all kinds of great stuff. Make sure to stop on by. Check that out. KPNL-DB.com is the website, everybody. When we get back from this commercial break, we will be talking with our good friend Stephen Myers from the Pharaoh's Pump Foundation, discussing the world of Egypt, the construction of the pyramids, a couple of different hypotheses, what his recent month-long trip was like, and is the Great Pyramid of Giza really a tomb like they say it is in Egyptology? We'll be getting into that here in just a couple of minutes with Stephen Myers right after this. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spigeric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies. Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation and workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store. Well, hello everybody and welcome back from this commercial break. Thank you so much to our sponsors as always. Thank you to all of you for continuing to tune in. We have been almost a year here as Curious Realm, many, many years in our incarnation before that. One of our great and favorite guests that we have on pretty regularly, a few times a year, The amazing Stephen Myers, he is the author of The Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid, How the Great Pyramid Was Built. He is also the head of the Pharaoh's Pump Foundation. You can find out information about his research and the use of the Great Pyramid as a water pump at thepump.org. Stephen just finished a whirlwind trip to Egypt, and I wanted to have him on to talk about some of the new stuff he may have found on his research trip there. He was there for quite a while, so we will be getting into some of his journeys while he was there, some of the sites that he saw, some of the famous sites like Dendera, things like that. Welcome back to the show, Stephen. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate this opportunity.
You are always welcome back on the show, especially after going out and taking pictures like this of you holding the pyramid by the tip. Absolutely oh, yeah. Awesome. What a great shot to show the perspective of the place and exactly how far away from the pyramid you had to be able to take that shot.
Oh, yeah. So, miles, yeah. It seemed like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let's go ahead and start getting into it. Number one, what was it that brought you into your work with the Pharaoh's Pump Foundation to begin with, into the world of pyramid research, and what drove you to going to Egypt to further your research?
Well, I'm kind of like a technical nerd guy. My degrees and certificates all are of a technical nature. And I like technology, ham radio operator. I collect antique gasoline engines and all of that. So if you like technology, and I also like history, I got a fascination about the Great Pyramid, a 45-story skyscraper built in distant antiquity. So it's a fascinating building. More books have been written about the Great Pyramid than any other structure on Earth. So I thought I would join that crowd and got into that. And then I've been to Egypt before, but I've just recently got back from a tour that I led with another person that lives in Egypt, Ramona Miles. And her website is lifealongthenile.com. So we co-led a tour to Egypt to see not just the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx, but a whole bunch of other sights and sounds in the great land of Egypt.
That is absolutely awesome. The fact that you were there for almost a month, pretty incredible. Most people, whenever they go, it's typically a whirlwind tour. Maybe they'll spend a week. You know, and even then, it's kind of like going somewhere like Europe for a week.
Right.
Like there is literally so much to see and take in that a week is not long enough. So the fact that you were there for a month is intense. What was it like for you to, I guess, immerse yourself in the culture over there? Had you been over there for such a long trip prior?
No, not that long, but the tour was actually 13 days, but I stayed, I got there a few days early to meet with some people and, you know, that type of thing. And then I stayed a few extra days, but, so yeah. And, it was quite a journey, but, it's, my kids, I have some adult children. They said, well, was it like what you thought it would be like? No. Even being there before, it's like opposite world. Everything is different from, let's say, the United States. And it was just not the sites, but the culture and the people and everything. All of that was really engaging for me.
I will absolutely bet it. It is. I know I myself spent a semester in Europe. God, I was 18, 19 years old at the time. But it is still something that vividly lives in my mind daily. So I can't. And Egypt was one of the many places that were on my hit list to try to go. And at one point during the semester, we had a 10-day travel period. And even that wasn't long enough to be able to like travel all the way there, do something and then come back.
Right.
If even from Italy, it was a voyage to get there.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's an adventure.
And, even doing this interview, you are just now getting over your jet lag from everything. So,
right. From the West Coast of the United States to Egypt is almost halfway around the world.
Wow.
10 or 11 time zones, and you can only go 12 time zones. And then after that, then you're starting to get closer back to where you started. So
yeah,
it's a journey to say the least. It's some pretty long airplane rides from San Francisco all the way to Munich, Germany, and that's a long ride. So it was interesting in a lot of ways.
I'll bet. Now, let's go ahead and start digging into some of the research that you had an opportunity to do while you were there. I mean, first off, you got to visit some amazing places. Let's get into sites like Dendera real quick. You had an opportunity to visit there. That is, of course, one of the many sites that is, I guess, quoted and used by many ancient alien people, ancient technology goers, things like that, about what was happening in Dendera. There was this sacred temple and these carvings of what appear to be some very interesting technology on the walls. So what did you learn while you were there at Dendera?
Well, it's a beautiful temple, a large complex, a center of religion, probably science, political, for the culture when it was built. But it has two features that are addressed by the ancient alien people and the high technology people, and that is the hieroglyph carving that looks, you have it on the screen there, that looks like a light bulb. And it's quite interesting. I mean, I was right there, and to get to it is you have to kind of climb down some steps and go kind of crawl under a low area, and it's quite hot over there. So it was a little bit of arduous travel walking inside there, but we've all seen pictures of it, and it looks like a light bulb to some people, more technically a Crookes tube, like early tubes they use for oscilloscopes and other purposes. And what can you say? The picture or what it is evidence, and then what you think it means is interpretation of evidence. They're two separate things. So it's very unusual, to say the least. I don't pretend to be able to, delve into the mind of the people who needed to make that depiction of those what looks like light bulbs, but or to know exactly what it means. But it's certainly is very strange. And of course, traditional Egyptologists give it a, they say it's religious, or it's a lotus blossom, or whatever. But it's so strange that it's hard to fathom what it actually means.
Well, and even just to go into Egyptian history, Egyptian herbology and magical use, like, yes, the lotus was in huge use, the blue lotus flower, of course, that grows in water in a desert place. As we all know, the Nile is sacred, so anything coming from the Nile would be sacred. And the use of a lot of blue lotus can lead to mild hallucinogenic experience, especially when steeped in wine, things like that. So
it's really strange.
Definitely used in their religious ceremony. The snake was also a symbol of healing, which the lotus petals had healing properties attributed to them. So, like you said, I think some of the issue is that, yes, people tend to go into the mind of the carvers, knowing the history of things like the lotus and the use of it, things like that, and can maybe take it to an extreme. Like you mention all the time on social media, the correlation factor. And just because something correlates does not mean that it is.
Yeah. Intended.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, but it's unusual. It's not something you see in every temple, like a depiction of Ra or anything like that. So it's just so different and unusual. And it may be a depiction of some sort of high technology. And you know, the ancient people were geniuses. There is no such thing as a primitive culture. And they, knew things probably that we don't know what they knew exactly.
Yeah.
So it was fascinating. And then there was the other feature, those what are called, the melted steps. And you see pictures here, but it's three or four flights. It goes up and it turns a 90-degree corner, and then it goes up again. And turns, it's like three or four flights of these melted steps that I call it that, but they're just unfathomable. People say, oh, well, it was a high temperature, but the walls beside it don't appear to be affected or have that similar effect. It's just an anomaly. It's just something that is really strange. You don't see anywhere else.
Well, even as a rock hound myself, you could maybe say like, hey, you know, water went down the steps, something like that. But typically you wouldn't have the mounding effect that you see.
Yes.
There would be like the channel that you see in the middle of the steps would continue. You wouldn't see mounds of material like in that image right there where it's obstructing the flow of water. You know, anything like that. So it really, and then it ceases on some steps.
Right. And how did they get water up about to the third story for 1,000 years, pour water down these specific steps to make that effect? I mean, it's, people have explanations, but they all seem to have flaws in it. It's just an anomaly. And I walked up them. You can walk right up them and get up to the roof of that temple. It's something you need to see firsthand. And we also had local guides, if you will, or Egyptologists or whoever, whatever you want to call them. And they, we had a couple of young guys and they said, yeah, it is strange and it's odd and it's hard to explain. So.
Yeah, because it doesn't look like typical rock weathering. And even if it was, like, you can see right there in that image, there is a window that goes out.
Yeah.
It's not like it's exposed to the whole world for it to weather.
No, there's a roof and everything on it. And then other places, that rock isn't like that. And that's one of the things about going on a tour. I can tell you this about travel. It's always expensive and always worth it.
Yeah.
So, a lot of people advocate travel, everyone from Mark Twain to myself. You know, travel is education.
It is.
They're just incomprehensible. It's odd. And it's the only example in ancient Egypt of steps that are like that. So, it's unexplainable.
Yeah. And like I said, as a rock hound myself, someone who I love geology, I love the study of it. That is just a strange weathering pattern. If that is what they claim it to be.
Yeah. If that's what it is.
Or even erosion pattern. You know, yeah. You would either have to have some insanely fast moving water that just stopped and everything settled and hardened immediately. Thousands of years to grind the groove into those steps the way it is. So just really strange.
They're not really exposed to the weather. They're inside the building, and it's just, just odd.
Yeah.
They are eerie almost when you're right there. You don't know exactly what caused it. And some say it's a chemical reaction. Well, what chemical? And, you know, no one offers a demonstration to lend credence to their explanation. So it's just one of those things that is an enigma, if you will.
Well, you know, and getting into chemical reactions, getting into, you know, technologies that Egypt did have, there is a video that you posted while you were there, and I'm about to play the video. It's about a minute long, and it's from a quarry. And I think what a lot of people forget is that when it comes to the pyramid, as opposed to the Sphinx, which, you know, was basically carved out of rock that was there, the pyramids, everything was quarried miles up the road and brought down via water. And that is a big part of what you get into in the lost technologies of the Great Pyramid, is the possible lock system that was used, things like that. And we'll get into erosion in the area, all that in just a minute, and some of the other things that you discovered for your upcoming book. But I want to play this little minute-long video because I think it really gets into some of the stuff that you were there to do. You weren't just there to necessarily sightsee. So let's go ahead and play this and check it out real quick.
We are traveling along the Nile River right there, and we are in a sandstone quarry. And it's quite interesting. It's magnificent and massive. So it is well worth the stop on our little cruise along the Nile. It's beautiful. A lot of stonework, quarrying operations here on a massive scale. The stones went to Luxor and other temples here in the area. So it's fun to see and an excellent experience. So if you want to know more about me, Stephen Myers, just go to my website at thepump.org and you maybe find out a little bit about this tour once we post information on our website, or you can like me on Facebook. So all the information is at the website.
And really, really great imagery there showing the stonework, showing the cutting and where things were quarried out. And I, once again, wanted to show that because I think it's important that people understand the fact that, they were quarrying on a large scale.
Oh, yeah.
For numerous things, not just the pyramids, like you said, temples at Luxor, all over the places where the specific rocks from this quarry went. But they were miles away from location.
Yes. But that quarry, you could just walk a few steps from your boat that you're going down the Nile on and get to that quarry. And it was huge. And there were parts of it, you know, that we didn't even go to. So certainly they moved stones on barges to a lot of these temples that, again, were close to the Nile. Both Luxor and Karnak are very close to the Nile River. So they were geniuses in transporting heavy objects, and they used the power of water's property of buoyancy to move heavy stones. The Nile River is interesting because when you go downstream, your boat travels with the current, but the prevailing wind is upstream, if you will. And so if you want to go back upstream, you put out your sails. So they could go both directions with ease on the Nile River. And we couldn't do that here in the United States until Robert Fulton made his paddle wheel boat, steam powered. So they were way ahead of us by a long shot.
Well, and they were definitely masters of the domain that is the Nile. They fished it, they worked it, they transported goods through it, they traded via it. So to consider, and yes, they even dammed up parts of it, things like that. So to see once again the quarry here and its proximity to location to the water, let's start discussing how the pyramids were built and what evidence you found while you were there to help support your theory about them using water and a waterlocked system to do so.
Well, I contend that the Great Pyramid was built with ease, level by level, with the casing stones for each level set in place first, and then the interior stone set in place. So they used water locks from the Nile River and all the way up to the building site. The first stones set in place were the first layer of casing stones, and those stones are cemented together with an extremely strong bonding agent. The few casing stones left in place today are still bonded together watertight, so they fill that enclosure, that square enclosure, with water. And so you had a square pond about 4 feet high off of the base of the bedrock, and they had water locks all the way up to that pond so they could move stones on barges up into that pond, and then they would move a stone from the barge and set it into the pond. And when that pond was full of stones, the first layer of the Great Pyramid was completed. Didn't need strong back muscles or giants or a big ramp. And then they continued that process by adding the second layer of casing stones cemented together, and another water lock to that layer, added additional water, and used water locks. So that is described on our website. We have a video series that describes the whole process all the way up to the casing stone. And my first book is dedicated to the assembly process used to build the Great Pyramid.
And it really is, as we've said numerous times, just about every time we have you on, very much a common sense concept whenever you think about it, especially the fact that they were already transporting all the goods there. Why, especially when the Nile floods annually, that's on a cyclical thing. Like, you could take advantage of that all day long. There are numerous things to support this concept of things being built via waterlock. Aside from the casing stones, what evidence is there?
Oh, there's lots of evidence for water associated with the Great Pyramid. Sir Flanders Petrie found what he called Nile earth inside the passages and chambers, which is understood to be sediment. And Herodotus described the Great Pyramid as being built like an island surrounded by water. So there was a retaining wall that existed up until the 18th century around the Great Pyramid, and that was impounded water. So he probably saw that retaining wall with water in it. So it was a big island in a little lake, if you will. And just a whole host of other things that indicate water was associated with the Great Pyramid. You know, water is the lifeblood of any civilization. And the idea that the Great Pyramid was built for a purpose that actually helped people has been very compelling, that the Great Pyramid wasn't a tomb or anything that was ineffective in protecting the pharaoh's mummy, but that the Great Pyramid was a machine built as infrastructure to pump water So that's probably the biggest purpose ever proposed for the structure we call the Great Pyramid.
It is definitely, I think, I wouldn't say the boldest. I think probably the boldest is, you know, the fact that it was used as some sort of energy structure to wirelessly put forth energy. But it is, I think it is probably the most forward-looking and common sense idea of the use of the Great Pyramid, especially whenever you start getting into the known chemistry that the Egyptians were aware of. They did their own gold plating. They definitely had, they had the Baghdad battery, all kinds of things. So they definitely knew their basics of chemistry, and being able to hydrolyze water and separate hydrogen and oxygen can be done with lime, all kinds of readily available natural materials through a chemical process. So, trying to imagine the Great Pyramid as basically a big air piston to pump water is pretty common sense, actually.
I appreciate that. A lot of people say that the construction process, when they watch our video series on our website, they say that's really compelling. And they also like the idea that the Great Pyramid actually helped people and had a huge return on investment and that type of thing. So, the Great Pyramid as tomb didn't work. So long open passages with doors on pivots didn't protect the pharaoh's golden treasure. So, that indicates if that was the purpose of the Great Pyramid, then the original builders were failures. So I think that they built this huge infrastructure that provided prosperity. And people say, well, they had a yearly inundation. Well, irrigated in your cropland, once a year in a hot desert is probably not a very good farming practice. But to have this water pump that could pump water above the floodplain year round is very important. And it also powered machinery and used it to make compressed air and a whole host of other scientific purposes. I see the Giza Plateau as a science center and an industrial park more so than just a graveyard.
Well, and I think to do so really accounts for the ingenuity of the people. I think so many of the hypotheses that are out there, especially the out there hypotheses about the origins of the pyramids, the uses of the pyramids, they dwell in the world of non-UFO. And as I say on this show regularly, let's just call the UFO what it is. It's a UFO. It's unidentified. It's an object and it's flying. We do not like, we can leave it right there and have valid research and talk and have a great conversation. It doesn't have to be alien. The more you bring in alien, the harder it is to actively research the anomaly. It really does to obscure some of that, because until you prove alien, how are you going to get down this road of research now? First, you got to prove alien to begin with,
I'm not a proponent of ancient aliens building the Great Pyramid as such, because people that are proponents of that, I say, oh, you're telling me that the ancient people in the Valley of the Nile weren't smart enough to build the Great Pyramid. And then they start to backpedal. And you can't have it both ways. Either the ancient people weren't smart enough to build the Great Pyramid and we had to have aliens, or these ancient people were smart enough to stack stones on top of each other and then you don't need aliens.
Yeah, precisely. And, once again, I think it detracts from the ingenuity of ancient peoples.
It does.
Going back to the time of the pyramid, I guess shortly after, we would have things like Archimedes screw and that kind of stuff. But they definitely had means by which to pump water and to irrigate and to move things. And as we've said numerous times, there has to be an alternative use than the defined use for the Great Pyramid, because this is a tomb. See all those things on the wall that like instruct the person inside how to get to the afterlife?
Right.
Everything else. I'm going to bring up the King's different. Chamber right now.
yeah. Because, completely different. Construction, design, and certainly the writing on tombs, like in the Valley of the Kings, which we were at, everything was written on the ceiling.
Yeah.
And the floor, you know, the little niches. They all had pictographs, hieroglyphs, but in the Great Pyramid, they don't. It's like comparing a hydroelectric dam with a cathedral. You know, they might have been made by the same culture, but that doesn't mean they have the same purpose.
Yeah.
So much, much different.
And that's why I brought up the image of the King's Chamber, specifically this image of the King's Chamber, where you can see the burn marks on the walls, things like that. And especially the progressive burn marks on the wall, where it's darker and deeper burns toward where that, quote, sarcophagus is. And that is where they've always held that the king's sarcophagus was, things like that. But once again, folks, feel free to take a look at the walls of this barren, flat, nothing on them. There is a sacred tomb right there for somebody that was revered, cared for, loved. They wanted this person in the afterlife. They wanted this person to go on to all glory that there was when the sun rose and set with Ra. You come over here to the king's tomb in this really, really big temple built for a king who we don't know it was built for. And there's nothing. Like, this dude was just meant to go into oblivion and never be known, never go into the afterlife. Like, if you came from the gods, you ain't going back there. to me is strange.
It is strange. It's very strange. And then we're talking just a generation or two difference. Maybe even a thousand years, but still very different. But the inside of the Great Pyramid, in regards to writing, is very similar to the inside of an automotive engine. You know, the cylinders, they don't have any writing on them, you know?
Yep. Yeah, they don't have a serial number.
Maybe a serial number, but the inside of a distributor cap, you know, it might have a number or something, but probably doesn't. You know what I'm trying to say?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's a machine. It doesn't need any writing inside of it. So,
very
precisely. Different. But Egyptologists got their start as being tomb robbers. That's the genesis of Egyptology. So if you're a tomb robber and you encounter a temple or even the Great Pyramid, you're going to say, oh, well, that's a tomb. You know, and if you're a hammer, if you encounter something, you know, it's a nail. And it's their mindset is that it's a tomb, even though it doesn't look like a tomb, even though it has many passages and the pharaoh only had one carcass. It's a tomb. There must have been a change of plans because it's a tomb, even though it doesn't look like a tomb. But it's a tomb, and that's Egyptologists' mindset.
Yeah, and even the fact that there is a queen's chamber, that never really happened, you know.
No,
that was a rare thing. You'd rarely find a queen buried with a king.
Yeah, it's just odd, you know, about it. And Egyptology is actually the greatest hindrance to understanding ancient Egypt. And it's a science in crisis because they tell stories, but they don't engage in the scientific method and, you know, give credence to their explanations. They can't make a casing stone. you know, Great Pyramid casing stone. Egyptology can't make one, even though they know how it was done by workers all day long with the bronze chisels, tap, 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 making casing stones all day long. But the science of Egyptology can't do it because their explanation is both wrong and an impossibility. They can't produce the precision stone cutting with hand tools.
Well, and you know, oddly enough, even with modern accompaniment, they have tried to, and there are numerous things on National Geographic, things like that, where they have attempted to build a scale replica of the Great Pyramid in a scale amount of time. And cannot
do it. Yeah, they can't do it. And oftentimes on their TV documentaries, they will move a 1.5-ton stone a few feet and then say that's how 70-ton stones were moved. Very disingenuous.
Yeah. Well, it would also be the fact of the fulcrum you would be using would be almost the size of the Great Pyramid. It would be massive.
Well, it'd be like me saying I can pick up a full-size Chevy pickup, okay? I can just pick it up by hand.
Yep.
And I will demonstrate it by picking up a Hot Wheels.
That's right. I'll demonstrate it by picking up this 1/10-scale replica.
Yeah. And because I can pick up this little tiny one, that means that's how I would – but most people would say, no, go ahead and pick up the full-size one. But I don't know how Egyptology gets away with it. This is how they move the 70-ton stones. We'll move a 1.5-ton stone a few feet. Yeah. And then they think they did something. All they did was produce a lie.
Live on air.
But anyway.
Well, I think that's important for people to grasp, though, because, one of the things that we talk about regularly on this show, Stephen, is the religion of science and the fact that all too many people's works, books that are now used to teach Egyptology, things like that. Like you have entire people, like Zahiri Hawass, who, don't get me wrong, who would be, he'd be a dream interview. I'd love to talk to him. But I'd have a couple questions as well. Like what we've been posing, like the fact of, okay, cool. So it's for a king. What king did they hate so much that they don't want him to go to the afterlife? That's because it Khufu? They hated Khufu that much that they spent like an inordinate amount of time and money just to send him nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, time, money.
Well, what I would ask him, I would say I got $50,000 in my pocket. I want to buy an authentically made Great Pyramid casing stone that's full size.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll ship
it. You know how they were made. Why don't you make one and I'll give you $50,000.
Yeah.
You know, I want to purchase a product, but it ain't going to happen.
Well, and I'm almost 50 years old, Stephen. I am right up against that point where it was still taught that the slaves built the pyramids.
Right.
That the slaves are like that. Hey, man, that's what I was taught in Sunday school as a kid. You know, the Moses and his people helped build the pyramids. Not the case. Not the case.
Yeah. Even the citizenship status of the workers has nothing to do with what they did to be able to build the Great Pyramid. It's like Eli Whitney's cotton gin had a crank. It doesn't matter if a slave turned the crank or if a free man turned the crank, if you wanted to understand how a cotton gin worked.
Yeah.
So, you know, when they talk about, oh, well, they weren't slaves, that's just noise. That's doesn't help you understand how the Great Pyramid was built. So, you know, it's like Penn and Teller are, they're magicians. And someone says, well, how did they do the trick? Someone could say, well, Penn and Teller, they're not slaves. They're free men.
Well,
that doesn't tell you how they did the trick.
And point of fact, they have an amazing show on Showtime called BS. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but where they go out and they debunk mentalists. Like they go out and debunk all these things at the same time. Like, yeah, we're magicians and what we do is illusion and it's an act and there's no difference. But here's some people saying that this is real and they're trying to take your money. Let's find out. And it's pretty interesting. And they are willing to go through that scientific process and expose something
right
like
on
that to do so.
Right on.
And that's somebody who is an illusionist. Like they live their life via illusion, you know? So interesting
to see. They don't pass it off as truth.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And that's exactly the point of the show is that you have to realize that this is being passed off as capital T truth. And it's not. So. And you really do have to buyer beware when it comes to a lot of Egyptology, a lot of Egyptian research, things like that, because yeah, a lot of it is A, co-opted material to begin with, and B, what's the source material? You know, when you go through and you look, like you're saying, at quite possibly flawed research means, should that be what you're basing your next work on? You know,
right.
And that's what it's all been based on.
Yeah. The source material that you talk about is really important. And when I first studied Egyptology's explanations for, you know, the technical requirements to build the Great Pyramid, I thought, oh, well, I'll just, you know, find out about their source material, which would be like demonstrations. You know, in science, they do demonstrations. But Egyptology doesn't have that type of source material, no demonstrations. So it's really put their science in question and in crisis. So Egyptology is, you know, a lot of people don't agree with what they say anymore because of their poor research methods. So, but yeah, when we were at the Great Pyramid, we saw the bonding agent between the casing stones confirmed. Many other writers that talked about that, Flanders Petrie and others, and a few other things. So, and then that other stuff will be incorporated into my third book about the Great Pyramid.
Awesome. Do you have any kind of timeline on that? Do you have an expectation of yourself for that?
No, I've been kind of lax.
Well, I mean, you just got back. You just got back for certain, but you know, didn't know if you had like, you know, hey, I'm looking to have it done here in the next year, something like that. I know it can take a while.
Oh, yeah, hopefully in a year, you know, to get that done, to get on to the next project. But hopefully in a year, and it will be interesting, I hope, and, you know, a supplement to my other two books and that type of thing. I also produced two documentaries, and they're available on DVD, but I'm changing that. When I was in Egypt, there were people interested in the research.
Yep.
But they don't have the money. There was a lot of poverty and, you know, in the world. So I'm going to just make both of those documentaries available on YouTube, you know, for free.
Great.
And from there, people, you know, don't have, but Egypt in itself was quite interesting. And just a country of contradictions, like all countries.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're very modest with their dress for women, if you will, if I can say that. But then we also watched a belly dancer, which is part of their culture. So it was it was interesting, and a lot of noise and confusion and traffic. But it's a very dynamic country. I think our president is in Egypt right now for, I think it's either an environmental or economic conference. So there's a lot going on. It's Egypt's been a great ally to the United States and vice versa. So it's a powerful country, but different from the United States. You go, you drive, you know, to these temples, and you have to go through military checkpoints, you know, and then you have to go through all the metal detectors and everything. It's like when you United States, if you go from one county to another, there's not a military checkpoint and a lot of police presence and everywhere, you know, even in the city, at the temples.
Yeah, I was going to say it's even beyond what I had dealt with in Europe, where, you know, you're not going to be crossing borders on trains and not being asked for your passport. You know, like when you're on a Eurail, it's like, you got your ticket. All right, cool. not the case there. You better have your passport and your visa handy on you, you know? So, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. It was quite interesting. You know, it was a show me your papers mentality, if you will, if I can put it that way.
Sure.
And, that was strange for me. A lot of garbage in the streets, you know, in various places. And that was seemed normal. A lot of kids working, you know, they would come up to you and want to sell you stuff. And some were quite aggressive. A lot of stray dogs and cats laying in the street. Yeah. You know, crazy.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come on, share your experience. I watched from afar the whole time while you were over there in amazement, just seeing your pictures of the temples, the videos, stuff like that. So I want to thank you for coming on, always sharing the information from thepump.org and the Pharaoh's Pump Foundation. Before we let you go, let everybody know where they can go to watch the documentaries, where they can go to donate to the Pharaoh's Pump Foundation, where they can go to follow your newsletter and get the latest, all that good stuff, Stephen.
Okay, well, I evidently the interview's about over, and I hate that because we went to the High Aswan Dam, we went to a whole bunch of other places we never got to talk
about. Well, okay, if you'd like to keep talking, we can keep talking. That's not a problem at all.
We better, you know, enough's enough, but, you can find out everything, by going to thepump.org about the Great Pyramid, water pump. And you could go to my YouTube channel and, like us on Facebook as well. A lot of videos on the YouTube channel. So, and we'll be adding more in the near future. And we are a nonprofit, so you can donate if you want to, not just money, but expertise or mention on social media, hey, you know, this guy has a different explanation about the Great Pyramid, and put our website down. Anything helps get the word out. So, contact me by email is the best. Or on like Facebook to find out if you have a question, we can answer it. So that is probably and then of course the two books are available on Amazon.com. There's links from our website to those books. So yeah. I appreciate being on your show again. And we will have to do it another time in the future.
Oh, absolutely. Again and again and again, Stephen, I love having you on. I love our conversations. It is always revealing. And I want to thank you for taking the time to come on. Like I said earlier, I know that you are still recovering from what was a long trip and a crazy trip home for you. So thank you so much for your time. Please do hold the line while we close things out for the audience. While you're online checking out all of the amazing work of the Pharaoh's Pump Foundation, folks, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can find all the episodes. That is where you can find our knowledge vault full of declassified materials, all kinds of stuff, Project Stargate documents like we talked about last week with our guest, Lynn Buchanan. You can also stop off and hit curiousrealm.com/story to share your story, share your experience of the paranormal. If you're a witness, if you're an experiencer, if you have evidence, feel free to stop on by curiousrealm.com/story. You can share your story, your account, your experience there. You can make it anonymous. You can share your video, photos, audio, anything. And we will pose your experience to our professionals in interviews. So we're looking forward to some experiencer episodes soon. Stop on by, share your experience. Until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.